Thank you for that question, ma'am. This is Commissioner Crum. Yes, keeping a very close eye on the hospital populations. We actually have a working group that works on patient movement to make sure that Alaska hospital space is utilized. And we look at what's going on in the Northwest. Dr. Zink is routinely on calls with our Northwest health partners. And as far as the medevac side goes, I'll defer to Brian on that one.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. So same thing, our logistics folks within our medical branch and our EMS folks, the pre-hospital trauma folks, are staying in constant contact with the medevac providers around the state. And we spent an incredible amount of effort in the spring when we didn't know what was going to happen, planning out medevac operations, really getting a handle on the capacity of the commercial air ambulance providers all across the state, understanding what their requirements and their capabilities were, particularly with COVID transport, and then did a whole bunch of additional planning with the Alaska National Guard and the Department of Defense, the Army and the Air Force, to make sure that we had surge capacity if we needed it. Fortunately, we haven't had to get involved really at all. Providers have been able to kind of do regular patient movement. As usual, we had one unique circumstance in a community in the north where we had to, we ended up asking the Coast Guard to go do an air ambulance transport for us for a kind of unique situation where the commercial air ambulance providers couldn't do it. And that's really the only one that we've had to get involved with to date. However, you know, the case counts are kind of a lagging indicator. We certainly expect to see increased hospitalizations and unfortunately probably more deaths associated with this large acceleration phase we're in. So I think the good thing is we worked through all of that hand-wringing and planning effort in the spring, and all of that is still in place. We have some standing assignments through the Federal Emergency Management Agency to the military folks, and Paul and I work directly in the agency where the Alaska National Guard is. So we literally work with them on a daily basis. We're in the same offices with them. So still standing by there. And of course, the Coast Guard in Southeast is huge for all of us and all of you with the amount of incredible services that they're able to provide. So all that's still in place. If we had to move transport patients and we either reach capacity or, you know, in many circumstances, we get the Coast Guard or the National Guard involved when the commercial guys can't fly due to light concerns and weather and things like that. That's all in place and available still. We do have our alternate care site capacity still available in Anchorage and in Fairbanks for other communities. And like the commissioner said, Dr. Zink's in touch with our counterpart in Washington State. We're looking at the hospital capacities at places like Harborview as well, because, you know, obviously we're not the only state impacted, and there's kind of cases are growing pretty much nationwide. So we're keeping an eye on all of that.
Patty, did you have another question?
A little bit later.
Okay, thank you. Just tag on to Patty's question really quickly. Can someone, I look at the dashboard fairly regularly, and one of my concerns is that we may not be representing on that dashboard the availability of staff and staff crises. And I noticed that sometimes we appear to have beds and yet the hospital may be on deferral. How are we accounting for staff shortages in the overall picture? And how's that word get out to communities like ours that we're bumping up against it? And we need to be hyper-vigilant, or, you know, gosh, we're into zone red on staffing. Because I look at the beds, and I'm like, yeah, it doesn't look that bad. We got lots of beds. And then I hear that they're on deferral out of the hospital.
So thank you for that question. So as far as the staffing goes, we are in daily conversation with ASHNA and hospital CEOs, primarily around the Anchorage area on a daily basis. Sorry, I had the ring behind me. So we're constantly finding out where we're at, because you are correct. Sometimes they don't represent the actual staffing of the beds available. So we work on that to make sure where we're actually at. And the other issue, you mentioned about divert. I mean, it got some widespread notice about 4 weeks ago a patient from YKEC had to be put on divert. But then followed up, you know, Jared Cozen, president of ASHNA, came forward and said, no, this is the time of year we have a lot of hip replacements going on. We normally run at red line, and going on divert is not an abnormal thing. And so this is something that our hospitals are very well practiced at to make sure that they're providing levels of care and also maximizing space. So this is well within the normal scope of our hospitals.
I guess, Commissioner Crum, what I'm worried about is what is not normal is that we're in the middle of a global pandemic and that we have all these cases across our state, and that we know we have, I appreciate that this happens all the time, and, you know, it's just a part of life in Alaska. I appreciate that. But what I'm concerned about is that with the numbers blossoming, and we know that other states, Western states, are starting to send patients to Harborview and in Seattle because their own hospitals are full. Utah is now looking at rationing care, is the way it sounds to me, is they're trying to use the best of the commodity that they can. But I think that's the difference for me, is absolutely every year we bump up and you get bumped from this hospital to that hospital. This year, though, we got all this extra stuff going on in the unknown. So do we have a plan for that? Do we have what's the plan?
Yes, we do have a plan. So this is our normal practice on this stuff. We've got the alternate care sites as necessary, and we're just constantly monitoring. If there's open beds, wherever they be at, if necessary, we do that. We've got possible field hospitals from Samaritan Purse that we can launch out. So, I mean, if it comes to those near end of time scenarios, there's a lot of different options for making sure that people can find some level of care. It also would also turn into that if we had to do that to find staff, elective procedures would get canceled across the state. And so every ambulatory surgery center and available nurse and thing would be available to work and actually do converted beds in hospitals into ICU units. So we do have that kind of end of time scenario.
I don't like that end of time reference. That sounds horrible, but we'll stay away from that one. That doesn't sound good at all. Thank you, Commissioner Crum. Lisa, do you still want to hold with a deferred hand until later, or are you ready to go?
I'm happy to go unless there's a assembly member with a burning question, Mr. Mayor.
I think you're the only hand up, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a small handful of questions. So the first is, it's my understanding that in-state residents who are traveling from red zones or those areas that are experiencing significant outbreak have the ability to test when they get to the airport. So if someone is traveling from Anchorage to Wrangell, they can test when they get to the airport if they're coming from an intrastate destination, not just an interstate destination. And I'd like some confirmation on that.
That is correct. You don't even actually need to be traveling. Just be an Alaska resident in any of the 10 airports that provide airport testing. An Alaska resident can get tested at for free.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Along with the testing question, I did read today in the Anchorage Daily News that the state is receiving 220,000 of the rapid 15-minute tests. And of course, those are going to be deployed first to congregate areas that need it the most, which I understand. Is there a possibility that there will be rolling additional quantities of those tests coming in so that folks who are traveling have the ability, you know, on a regular basis to get a 15-minute test so we know immediately whether someone's carrying or not?
Yeah, thanks for that, Lisa. Oh, go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say, Wrangell's in a catch-22. And because you actually do not have a high case count going on, you have what's called a low pretest probability, which means antigen tests are not a good tool there. So I'll let Brian finish.
Yeah, thanks. And sorry, my video is getting dark because it's getting dark outside. So we have a couple of different things that are coming in. This week we announced the commissioner and others had some direct dialogue with Admiral Girard at the White House task force. And we're getting additional Abbott ID Now machines. They're those 15 to 25 minute kind of one test at a time, and that's a molecular test. We're getting 50 additional machines sent to us. They're not quite here yet. They're on their way. They're in the trucks or on the boats or whatever. And those are specifically coming to us to be able to deploy across the state to enable more testing for where we're having those outbreaks. So we're not going to be holding those in a warehouse in town or anything. We're going to be sending those out pretty quick here to deal with the outbreaks that we have. And then we're going to be moving those around, as well as a number of the other Abbott ID Now molecular testing machines pretty quickly. And then the antigen testing, we did receive an allocation of 220,000 of those, and that's the cardboard card. There, it's called the Binax Now. It's an antigen test. We haven't received the full 220,000 of those yet. That was the government. The feds purchased a lot, like $150 million or some large number of those from Abbott, and our state allocation was 220,000. We're getting those in slowly. They're coming in on a staggered basis as well. And, you know, they still have some conditions. You know, the antigen is not as good as the molecular tests that we're doing. They're also the emergency use authorization for those particular tests are strictly for symptomatic folks. So the EUA doesn't allow them to be used for asymptomatic. So in terms of regular surveillance testing or airport testing, those cards probably aren't going to be the right tool for now, unless the emergency use authorization changes and we're able to get more of those down the pike. But we are getting more of the molecular testing machines, and we're doing pretty good on the cartridges for those, and we'll continue to push those out down to you folks and around the state. If you did have a request for the Binax Now cards, though, Lisa, you're welcome to put the request in just like normal to the state EOC. And you can put that in now, and we'll have Dr. Cutchins, our pharmacist, and the team look at that request. And if there's an assisted living facility or a skilled nursing facility or some other congregate setting where you wanted them, and it has to be a CLIA waived or CLIA certified outfit that utilizes those as well. They're not at home tests. We're happy to look and fill in those, and you could just send those in just like you do the request for PPE and the other testing supplies.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Mr. Mayor, I have just a couple other short questions, if that's possible.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you. So the one sort of elephant in the room question I have is, I think the initial question that was asked is what can Wrangell do? We're looking for direction here. You know, as we think about the potential for local mandates to help make sure that we don't end up with a major outbreak, whether that's limiting gathering size in our community or going to a local mask mandate, do you guys have any, other than just that, well, whatever works best for your community, do you believe that putting those things in place will help prevent the spread in our community? Don't everyone answer at once.
So we have some staff, our epidemiology team, that are part of the CDC's Epidemiology Intelligence Service. And they were doing a review of like size gatherings and items like that. And the reviews on that was on the effectiveness have been kind of mixed, because what ends up happening is you inevitably have to have certain groups be allowed and other ones not. And so really what it comes down to is the benefit of, yes, if you are in a group, a large crowd gathering, you can't space, make sure you wear masks. Make sure that you do limit, be very mindful about if you do travel or do other aspects, that you come back in and you're not then going to a big party or family gathering. Those are the kind of things that we're looking at for some of the small towns. You know, and I know that we've had the ongoing issues with the ferry as well, but it has made you a little even more cut off. So that almost is a little bit of a protector. It's a sensitive issue, but it's things like that, how you protect the community. It's really getting everybody just to understand those things that do work. And yeah, the masks inside, it seemed to be a very big benefit towards it. in that. Those are the things that we're looking at. You know, one other item actually I forgot to mention early on is the PPE aspect. We have heard, and I didn't get a chance to ask the doc, if you guys are running short on gloves or any items like that. We have heard from around the state that's an issue. So one of the things that we have worked on is we're actually doing a mass procurement from the state side. I'm doing a bulk purchase of gloves. The goal is to get every hospital and clinic stocked up, while at the same time we have a long-term commitment from a couple different vendors for monthly shipments of gloves in. So I forgot to add that.
Dee Dee, I don't know if you want to weigh in on the PPE side too. I know we've got some issues.
Yeah, so I'm actually putting together a resource request for gloves at this time. It seems like that's the one thing we've gone through. Maybe I'm not ordering enough, or I wasn't ordering enough when I was putting in those requests, just thinking they'd always be there. So we are going to be placing an order for the EMS side through the EOC.
Yeah, no, and it definitely not you. You were ordering plenty. It's kind of happening around the state, and I'll tell you, kind of statewide and nationally, and global supply chain wise, we're kind of playing PPE whack-a-mole. So you know, some weeks or some months, we have all the bouffant caps we need, and all the gowns and face shields, and we're short on gloves. And next month, it may be something different, but you know, like the commissioner said, we're committed to making sure that the state acquires that, whether it's from the feds or making direct purchases like the commissioner referred to continue to resource you with that. I think everybody would like to go back to their normal, you know, distributors and buying stuff from Grainger or however you normally do it. But we're just not there yet globally. So we're committed to continue to do that. So, yep, ask early and often, and we'll fill what we can. We still aren't filling 100% of everything all the time. But we're going to do our best to get you what you need. And definitely if you're getting to a critical shortfall, just let us know and you'll be at the top of the list, and we'll communicate that all the way through and get that shipped out as fast as we can. I think on the community side, Lisa, some of the other things in addition to what the commissioner said, you know, we had lots of conversations early on when the travel mandate and the testing requirement first went into place, lots of conversations. I think Mr. Mayor, you and I and others had conversations about enforcement. That's always the difficulty with those kind of municipal or state level mandates. How are they going to be enforced? So I certainly think that is a consideration there. We saw some pretty quick turnaround and some very vocal challenges to the Alaska School Activities Association. They had put out some guidance or some requirements for student athletes to wear masks no matter what, whether they were practicing or participating in an event or not. I think they reversed that decision and said it's strongly recommended now. So we're certainly hearing a lot of feedback from the public about those types of requirements. You know, I think it's a fine line between asking folks to do the right thing and then telling them they have to do it. And I really do think the problem is really on the enforcement side. How do you really enforce something like that, you know, across the board on everybody who's, you know, we're just here, we're feeling that the COVID fatigue or hearing that certainly from everybody. So it's a real delicate balancing act, I'd say.
Thank you, and agreed. It absolutely is. I had a conversation with our chief this afternoon about enforcement, the delicate nature of enforcement. My last question here is, given that the Senate at the federal level has broken until after the election, it appears now there is not going to be an additional act passed prior to the end of the year regarding the extension of CARES Act funds past the end of the year or additional funding. And my very big concern is that obviously COVID isn't going away until, as you indicated, likely we have widespread vaccine use and deployment. And so we're getting to a point where we need to be able to have things in place past the end of the year, but our CARES Act funding is going to expire and we're not going to be able to use it. And as you aptly pointed out at the beginning of our discussion tonight, we have had significant economic challenges and are experiencing significant revenue reductions because of lack of sales tax, et cetera, We're down 50% in terms of revenue, not only to our businesses, but to us in terms of tax revenue. And so we don't have money to be able to spend on the extra COVID things if our COVID money sunsets at the end of the year. And I'm just wondering if there are any potential solutions out there so that we can keep things like alternate isolation places in sight so that we can provide for additional testing once the state decides to stop doing testing at the end of the year in order to keep our community safe. There are a number of other things I'm not thinking of right now, but those are just a couple off the top of my head.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'll go ahead and start, and I think Paul will jump in here. We certainly are at all levels. We were pushing the congressional delegation, tell them about the concern, not only about the extension of the existing CARES Act funds, but about the whatever the next round is going to look like. We've been pushing very hard, to fight for incorporation of additional municipal relief funds in there. But in the interim, CARES Act is one of those pots of money that's out there. One of the other pots that is still there, it's independent of the CARES Act and the fact that Congress has recessed, is reimbursement through FEMA's public assistance program. And if Director Nelson's on, he can speak a little bit to that, because that's still available and will be. Before you go, Paul, I did want to mention, at this point, we have extended the contracts for the airport testing through the end of the calendar year. I think that's just a procurement thing. We're definitely going to look, and we certainly want your feedback in early December. And we're going to be reassessing all those. It's not guaranteed that we're going to end that airport testing or the distribution of testing supplies by the end of the calendar year. We're going to be looking at that constantly. We are certainly communicating with the feds that the testing supplies aren't available commercially, and still pushing pretty hard to get that to be able to support you all in your testing needs and keeping our airport testing up and running as well, in addition to everything that the state public health labs are doing. So, but Paul, I'll turn that over to you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. So, Lisa, that's a great question. We're actually getting that question from a lot of communities. I've become my department's CARES Act expert, but I really only know the tip of it. It's a huge pot of money, and it comes in a lot of different ways. The money that your community, a good way to put it is CARES Act funding is the pie, and the money that your community received, which was under the Corona Relief Fund, which was a slice of the pie. And so it's also very refreshing to hear that Wrangell is using their CARES Act funding to meet the needs of the communities. But as Brian mentioned, what we have is a federal disaster declaration. That currently doesn't have an end date to it. And so what we have is the public assistance program, which is what we're resourcing a lot of the requests that you are putting through the State Emergency Operations Center. And the state pays a 25% match. The feds pay 75% of that. So as far as we know right now, that does not have a December 31st cutoff date. Now, at some point, the federal government will say, here's the end of this event. And then we'll have a performance period that will tack on, usually about 6 months after that. And we don't know when that'll be yet, but we don't expect it to be anytime soon, certainly not before December 31st. And when you look nationally at the spike in cases and the things that we're not only facing as a state, but as a nation, our expectation is that it will continue on past December 31st. So what our public assistance program was opened up under the federal disaster declaration was what we call Category B, emergency protective measures. The good thing about that is all the things that you mentioned, all your concerns, testing, non-congregate sheltering, PPE, all those types of things absolutely fall under Category B, emergency protective measures.
Okay.
So we expect to continue on with that program. So as Brian said earlier, put in those resource requests, put them in early, put them in often. And we as a state are going to look under every rock and use every available resource to make sure that we can fund your needs as a community and our needs as a state in general.
Thank you so much for that. That's extremely helpful. And puts me a little bit at ease. So thank you.
That's great. I'm going to go back.
Your Corona Relief Fund.
Go back to Patty.
Yes, and I was worried about that December 31 deadline, and I anticipate that wave will continue past the end of the year. Two things. I would encourage you to check with school districts for PPE supplies and coordinate with them. I know our EOC coordinates with our school system, and they are having in-person classes. And then the other thing, the last thing, is many Wrangell community members, or several, have called me, and they're constantly comparing COVID-19 to other viral conditions like the cold and the flu. Is there some kind of publication or information sheet that you can put out that compares and contrasts those three viral conditions, so that the public does take a little bit more notice of the disaster, potential disaster of COVID?
Yes, we have been putting some information out there like that. In the last press conference we did last Tuesday, there actually was a slide where we talked about influenza compared to COVID for mortality rates. And the only age group not affected more by COVID is ages 1 to 14. They're more likely to have adverse effects from influenza, but every other age group is many times more likely to have adverse effects from COVID. But we will, perhaps I'll talk with my comms team, and maybe we'll do a posting on that again.
Thank you.
Other assembly members, any other questions? Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, Patty, just in our last incident command meeting for search, it was brought up that the recent stats look like currently, on average, the fatality rate from COVID-19 is 10 times the average rate from influenza. And that is not taking into account the huge mitigation plans that have been in place, the masking, the hand washing, the testing that we've done for COVID-19 compared to influenza. So because this is a public meeting, I think that's important to get out there, that it is clearly a much more deadly disease and worthwhile trying to prevent at all costs.
Thanks, Lynn.
Well, and I'll put this out there that several community members have called me and said that they will not get tested, that they're going to try to hunker down if they have symptoms, and they don't know when they would go to the hospital, and that's one of my fears. That may be one of the reasons why our numbers are low. Because of the fear of having to be medevaced out. So we need to acknowledge perhaps that may be the case.
That is very concerning and something that we should address. I think that we should view everybody who feels they have symptoms or might have been exposed, who gets tested or who is in contact with somebody who's positive, as a hero. It is a absolutely huge inconvenience to be taken out of circulation for 10 days to 14 days. But it is the biggest thing that we can do to reduce the spread and let the rest of the economy keep rolling forward locally in our town. And I think that we have the ability in Wrangell, because we've got isolation on our side, because we've got testing on our side, because we've got overall a population that's dedicated to the health of our community. We've got the ability to keep it under control if we don't let down our guard.
Sure. Thanks for that, Lynn. Assemblymember Morrison.
Yes, I just have a quick question. As far as someone that's had it and recovered, are they 100% immune from getting it again? Number one. Number two, are they also 100% non, they can't spread it anymore? They can't be a Typhoid Mary anymore? Is that true or not true? because I know so, that some people that had it feel that that is the case.
The current data shows that you do have immunity for at least 90 days, and that if somebody who is COVID positive and they do their isolation for 10 days, then after that point in time, they are no longer considered a viral shedder. So no, that we do not believe there'll be a typhoid variant at that point in time. As far as the greater than 90 days aspect, there is a lot of studies that are going on trying to confirm whether the immunity is going to last or not.
Okay, that was my, thank you very much.
Other questions? I would like to, I know Jamie is on the line. Jamie, do you have a question? I know you kind of, you usually talk with these folks pretty regularly, but do you have any questions for the state team?
Yeah, I thank you for the opportunity. I did have a question about kind of the long-term effects. And I know the state was looking at creating a portion of their website to talk about long COVID, or what they call the long haulers. And I'm wondering how that's going. And what is there a percentage of people that you're finding that have long-term effects? We're talking, you know, maybe 4 months out.
At this point in time, the CDC's official stance on that is the long-term effects are unknown. A lot of the stuff that does come back is a little anecdotal. So we are trying to evaluate that both in the state about if we can have some of our hospital providers maybe do follow-up checks and compile that data, as well as things that are occurring nationally. But that is what we currently know.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other assembly people, members? It's looking pretty clear there. You know, I just, again, before we turn it back to Doria, Captain Spray here, I wanna thank you guys again. My personal concern is that we're doing great, and I'd like to continue doing great. We are sort of like Eliza's Swiss cheese and potholes kind of analogy. I feel we're in the same boat. You know, we haven't done an official survey, but my little unofficial sitting outside the grocery store watching patrons go in, we're less than 20% compliancy with masks. I think there is exhaustion, but for us also, there is just a belief that it's not going to hit you. And the irony is that the folks that get hit become the largest advocates for wearing masks and social distancing. And I've seen that twice now in our community, where somebody's loved one got very sick and had to get medevaced out, and then all of a sudden they were huge advocates for the masks and social distancing. So, but I really appreciate the great information that you folks have provided. Is there anything else, Commissioner Crum, any other words of wisdom for us as we do our little battle down here in the corner of Southeast?
I would just say, I think it's really appreciate the leadership. You guys are actively engaged in the process, and believe it or not, that's one of the most difficult. So that is the best part about this is you guys are so involved in the process. You're trying to find the best information, how to help your people and individuals. So thank you for that, continuing that process. One thing that we have said throughout with these communities we talk to is please just have a real quick trigger to ask for help. If you do need resource requests or any other items, please reach out, let us know. Any other things of concern that pop up, we're trying to make sure that we have the tools in place and we can deal with clusters. So we've got some public health strike teams to help with clusters or outbreaks, and we're just trying to plug the gap where we can.
Thank you all so much. Really appreciate your time tonight, and we'll let you guys run away. I know you're all super busy and giving up another evening from your families, or at least waiting for your daughter to come back out from practice. But thank you all very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Assembly.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Assembly.
talk to you folks soon. Captain Spray, we'll turn it back to you at this point.
Thank you. And I just want to again say thank you to the state personnel for taking the time to provide us with that update and stay on to answer questions. Like we've said before, the DHSS has been absolutely fabulous. I feel like they have open lines of communication. There are a number of different ways, and I'd like to encourage the assembly to, if you can, listen in on the echoes that they put on. They do them a lot throughout the day, and they target different areas. So they have some that are targeting the school, they have some for local governments and for EMS. And so some of our questions we don't have to hold on to and hope we can get an answer, you know, when we wait for a town hall or something like this. They may be answering that during one of these echoes. So I would like to encourage the people on the line or the assembly to look into that UAA echo COVID-19. But just kind of in summary of what the state has said and looking at everything that's going on within our state, I know Wrangell, we look pretty good, and I touch wood that we can keep it that way. But when we kind of look at the bigger picture and what Commissioner Crum has said and Brian Fisher about it, it's kind of more community spread and coming from folks who, you know, aren't keeping their bubbles small, they're intermixing and, you know, not taking advantage of all those speed bumps that we can put out there with mask wearing and social distancing. I just really want to, on behalf of the EOC, bring it forward to the assembly to start the discussions and consider holding a special meeting to reevaluate a mask mandate for our community. I feel like we feel like it may be one of our options so we can keep these numbers low within our community. I know that the governor says he supports local government making local decisions for themselves, and that just puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the assembly and our local government. But we are in a position where we need to look out for the greater good of our community and get ahead of it. We're looking at the YK region in just a crazy position right now. And I would really like to see Wrangell stay ahead of this however we can. And so again, on behalf of the EOC, I would like to ask that the assembly consider a special meeting to start those discussions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Dee Dee regarding a special meeting to discuss the potential of a mask mandate, and any other questions for Dee Dee in general? I'm not seeing anybody's hand up here. So Kim, under the directive of the EOC, then can we please schedule a special meeting with the sole purpose to discuss a potential mask mandate as well?
Yes. So for a special assembly meeting, we need at least 48 hours notice. Is there a suggestion as to when? So the earliest we could have that would be, if I advertised tomorrow, would be Friday, but I don't think the assembly wants to have a meeting on Friday. And Tuesday's election day. What's that?
November 2nd. Would that be available?
On Monday the 2nd?
Yeah. Assemblymember Gilbert?
Monday is a school meeting, school board meeting. Maybe Wednesday after the election.
I unfortunately am flying down to see my mother. Not unfortunately, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I'm traveling to see my mother. on Wednesday. I could go the Thursday, the 5th.
And the one thing I would ask is that we have a robust amount of time for public testimony.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that would put it for what would be Thursday, November 5th. Now, Dee Dee, are you feeling like if this discussion is put off till Thursday, you know, basically well over a week away, is that, you know, is that appropriate or should we look at another option?
No, I think that that gives the community plenty of opportunity and time, like Patty just brought up.
Sure, certainly. Okay, Kim, can we please schedule then the special assembly meeting on Thursday, November the 5th, for the purpose of discussing a mask mandate?
Sure, for 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. would be perfect.
Okay. And is this, can I please just get clarification? Is this just for the discussion or are you requesting that an actual mandate be brought forward for discussion and possible adoption?
We have brought forward is the options and I would
Mr. Mayor, we can't hear you very well. It's almost like there's a ring.
Yeah, I apologize. Is that any better if I turn towards my computer here?
Yeah, it is, yes.
So I would recommend that we have sort of options available for us to look at, but that we will take action in a separate meeting. And this meeting is strictly to gather input and have discussions with an opportunity for the community to come forward and also a opportunity for the assembly to look at what's available in terms of options.
Okay.
Okay. At this point, is there anybody else who has anything they want to include at this point? Otherwise, I will conclude 13A. At this point, at 7:24, I'm going to call for a recess for 10 minutes, and we will come back at 7:35. So we will recess at 7:25. Thank you.